The first of this morning's scripture reading is taken from Jeremiah chapter 23, verses 1 through 6. Woe to the shepherds who are destroying and scattering the sheep of my pasture, declares the Lord. Therefore, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says to the shepherds who tend my people. Because you have scattered my flock and driven them away and have not bestowed care on them, I will bestow punishment on you for the evil you have done, declares the Lord. I myself will gather the remnant of my flock out of all the countries where I have driven them and will bring them back to their pasture, where they will be fruitful and increase in number. I will place shepherds over them who will tend them and will no longer be afraid or terrified, nor will any be missing, declares the Lord. The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, a king who will reign wisely and do what is just and right in the land. In his days, Judah will be saved and Israel will live in safety. This is the name by which he will be called, the Lord, our righteous Savior. And from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 6, verses 30 through 56. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered them, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, "Five and two fish." Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the grass green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the five loaves and the two fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the two fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciple picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to Bethesda, where he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost, and they cried out, because they had all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them and the wind died down and they were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves and their hearts were hardened. When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret and anchored there. As soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized Jesus. They ran throughout that whole region and carried the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages, towns, or countryside, they placed the sick in the marketplaces. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. This is the word of the Lord.
Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. This simple phrase is one of the songs from the Tézé community in France, where many pilgrims travel each year to get away and pray. The simple phrases, which are sung repeatedly, help pilgrims on their journey to come into a deeper relationship with God. Let us find a deeper relationship today as we look at this passage from Mark's Gospel about the feeding of the 5,000. When we live in places where it's easy to get to the sea, people come to the ocean to smell the sea air, to rest from their busy lives in cities that are bustling, or to enjoy the thrill of wind in their face as their boats sail into the sunset. Family and friends come together in the summertime to wiggle their toes in the sand and to walk in the forest and experience the thrill of catching a fish or a hermit crab or listening to a bird. Summer might not always be a restful time by the ocean on a beach, but we are in a place where we are surrounded by the quiet of the forest, the beauty of cranberry bogs, and the singing of the birds in the trees, and homes which are nestled into places that we see and feel God's creation each day. Resting here helps the mind to become quiet enough, just like I was trying to explain to the kids, to hear God's voice. Jesus starts out in Mark 6 this morning by asking the apostles, which is a word meaning one sent as messenger, to come away with Jesus to a quiet place and to get some rest. Our lives might not always be restful, but when we go to the ocean or to the bog or to the forest, it is a time to be away and to leave all the cares of other things behind and to be in God's creation, vast and marvelous. One of the things we find most restful about being on Cape Cod in the summer is unplugging from all of the technology which is ever-present in Silicon Valley and is exhaustive to the human brain. These disciples had just come back from their missions, and they were exhausted. Doing God's work is very important work, but it is exhausting and it is draining. Jesus recognized that in order to do the work effectively, God's messengers need periodic rest and renewal. Jesus and his apostles, however, did not always get the rest that they needed. So first we have these disciples who needed a good rest so that they can be recharged and sent out again. So Jesus takes them to a quiet place to find rest before being sent out again, this time into a multitude of thousands of people. The people in the community Mark is referring to were in need of a shepherd so that they would not be in grave danger of wandering into other paths. So Jesus was leading them by teaching, by healing, and by helping, and being their shepherd in the midst of some very challenging times. Even in the midst of the feeding of the 5,000 that we encounter today, the multitudes of people were well over 5,000. It says there were 5,000 men, but we have to be sure that there were women and children with those men who had made the journey, and it was a huge, huge crowd. And there, these disciples are looking out over this crowd who are hungry and wanting to eat. And looking at, they have 5 loaves and 2 fish. And you heard her say, are we to go and spend all of these wages to feed these people? The disciples are standing there. They're tired. They're exhausted. They're sleep deprived. I'm not sure if any of you have ever been in that situation, but things become a little fuzzy. And they're just trying to figure it out. They still can't get their minds around who Jesus is or how this could occur, because all they see out in front of them is too little food and a sea of people who are very hungry. I kind of imagine it kind of like a Who's On First skit or something that Saturday Night Live might do, as the apostles look at one another, fumbling and trying to figure out a solution. We too look at it from our scientific minds and try to figure out how logically this could occur. We want to explain away what really happened so that it is logical. But when God is on the loose, it can be sometimes anything but logical. Sometimes we have to get away from what we can think can happen and let God be the one in the driver's seat, amazing us beyond our limited comprehension. And so the apostles, the sent ones, stand back and let Jesus take those 5 loaves and 2 fish and feed the people. And there you have it. God shows up and all are fed. Simple equation. 5 + 2 = remembered through all history. Life which is directed by the Spirit is anything but logical, my friends. A situation which seems impossible with human resources is simply an opportunity for God to show up and amaze our limited human minds. What can we learn from the opportunities that God places in our path for growth? Why did Jesus choose to feed these people? Can this lake that Jesus keeps coming back to be transformative? And how can the ordinary become extraordinary? What can we learn from the opportunities that God places in our path for growth? Our family worships at a congregation in Gilroy, California. The congregation is fairly active in missions and wanted to branch out to working in Mexico, where they had been serving in the past this year. So this spring, they set up a trip, and a small group of adults and teens headed to Mexico on a visioning trip. We were looking to gather information of what future mission trips might look like for the congregation. When we arrived at Rancho La Paloma, an hour's drive from San Diego to the east, in a town called Tecate, the difference between rich and poor was right out our back door. The most exclusive resort, where many American movie stars travel to rest, had their organic vegetable garden butted up to the small camp-like area we would call home. Before we ever went into the communities, we had a session on missions and what it might look like. It was based on a book by Stephen Colbert called When Helping Hurts. One of the biggest problems in mission work today by North American Christians, as evidenced by this small community, is that people want to come down and to do something to those that they serve, when what the people are really in need of is to make mission work transformative. Transformation happens when those who come to serve partner with those who live in the communities to accomplish something together, so that the accomplishment is rooted in the community and gives them a light as how they can help themselves once the group leaves. It is a much longer, more transformative vision of ministry than going down and doing something which leaves those who live in the community out of the equation. We were shown time and time again how just building something for someone and leaving it just creates bigger problems. This was a transformative way of thinking for all of us and gave us a lot to think about coming home, potentially a longer process, but one that would actually bring restoration to hurting communities and a vision of what God's work could look like. The next day, our job was then to go out and to ask the missions in the communities what they were in need of, instead of going down to with tools and fixing something. We had the opportunity to visit several churches and an orphanage, which were in need of groups to come down and be a part of their ministry. Two things really stood out. The first was the church high atop a very long, bumpy, i.e. scary, drive up a mountainside. The church was nestled among homes built of old garage doors, garnered from the San Diego dump about an hour away. All the homes paid about $2 to have water delivered to a bucket. In the church, you took a pail full of water from the bucket to flush the toilet after you were done, never flushing down toilet or paper anywhere in Mexico. I wondered how many comfortable Christians would endure such conditions to have the opportunity to praise and worship God with those they came to serve, if this is what they encountered each and every week. The pastor worked full-time in a factory off the mountain, i.e., scary ride down, up and down twice a day. One group who had come to serve in this community took the resources that this community had, which were hundreds and hundreds of rocks and children. One of the problems they faced was driving in the darkness, i.e. on the scary mountain. The children helped to paint rocks with fluorescent paint and put the rocks on the dirt to form lighted pathways so that those traveling at night would have pathways to drive home safely. The community is very proud of this improvement and has the resources, i.e. children and rocks, to continue the project when needed. The second one, which really stood out to me and helped me to really understand the concept of transformative mission, was an artistic ministry. It was an art studio, which ran classes, and from those classes of local people, was discipling the students, and now has a church that meets in the studio on Sunday mornings. They had just had their first wedding there before we had arrived. Where we might have just seen an art studio, this visionary couple has seen a way to bring Jesus to the community. Look around Hanson. What are the resources here? Where are the growing edges that God might be calling this congregation to be transformative here in our own communities? Who is it that God puts in our path that might be a new ministry just waiting to happen? Everything can be life transformative if we look for the ways that Jesus is calling us to serve the multitudes in front of us with just 5 loaves and 2 fish. Sometimes God's opportunities are right in front of us, waiting to be realized if we only have the faith and the vision and are willing to move forward. Why did Jesus choose to feed these people? Jesus does not ignore our needs. He looks at both our physical and our spiritual needs, and you can't feed one without the other. So we're listening here and learning here, but I know there's food sitting right out there. He knew that as he fed their spiritual feeding his teaching, that he also had to feed their physical needs. These people had traveled from faraway villages to come and hear and experience what it was that Jesus was sharing. His reputation had spread, not by the internet or cell phone or TV news or Facebook, but by word of mouth, one person telling another, and them being so drawn that they started walking, some for days, to get a glimpse of what this man was about. It was so exciting that everyone wanted to be a part of it. The pilgrims coming to America knew that same kind of fervor. Their lives were on the line, and they were not sure what was next, but they were sure that God was leading them someplace, and they followed that in faith. There is a hot ticket on Broadway nowadays. I bet you're thinking it's Hamilton, but it's not. After booking tickets a year in advance, we had the opportunity this June to see Dear Evan Hansen. It's now in its second year. If you are not familiar with this new musical, its story moves one like Les Miserables or Phantom of the Opera. The title character, Evan Hansen, is a high school senior with severe social anxiety, which inhibits his ability to connect with other people and make friends. After the suicide of one of his classmates, he fabricates a lie that inadvertently brings him closer to this classmate's family, while also allowing him to gain his own sense of purpose. The underlying themes are that of mental illness and youth suicide, which, if you are unaware, are running through our youth culture at epidemic proportions. As a parent of a teenager, there are days that it is all we can do to just keep our youth alive and away from the messages of social media and anger prevalent in society. The story of Dear Evan Hansen typifies that people are not able to rest their bodies, their minds, or to get away to a quiet place and to hear what it is that God is calling them to do. Our youth and their addictions, not just to drugs, but to technology, have left them in a place of despair. Our kids need to be fed. They are hungry for clean food and for spiritual nourishment. If we are sitting here saying we are too old for that ministry, in listening to NPR right here a couple of weeks ago, there was an interview with grandmothers called Grannies Rising Up. They're rising up to fight the battle of the children who have been separated from their parents at the border of Mexico, and how these older women are going to march on Washington to voice their opinions. God is not concerned with our age. God uses the resources at hand and creates miracles. The church of our time will need to figure out a way to reach those who are at our masses, out our doors, to look at and pray about the pressing needs in the communities all over this country that are in need of Jesus' healing power. Our calling is to look at the people right around us, right here in Hansen, and figure out their needs and how, through Jesus, they might be fed. Jesus chose to feed these people in this massive crowd because these are the ones that God called him to in his sphere of ministry at this particular time, at this particular ministry. He didn't choose to be born in Palestine in the first century, or to be God's son, or to be reclining on a mountainside with these particular folks. But this was the ministry that he was chosen for, called to, and served with grace, courage, humility, and patience. Jesus looked around, saw the needs, and served them. His mission work was that of seeing the people's needs in front of him and serving them by following what God was calling him to do at that time, leaving a legacy that we still follow today. Jesus took 5 loaves and 2 fish, saw their needs, and empowered the people to serve themselves and to be fed. And we still remember it today. Why is the lake in this passage mentioned over and over again? And can the lake itself be a symbol of transformation? We are here in this part of the world, and we are well acquainted with bodies of water. The ocean is all around us. Some of us might have ponds in our backyards, and I am sure that some of you have fished in rivers which surround you. Water is all over this place. Our passage shares with us that Jesus gets into a boat and goes to a solitary place, and then when the crowd has been fed, he gets into the boat on the lake again, where Jesus teaches his disciples. Then again, he gets out of the boat on the lake, and Jesus heals those who come. Let me suggest that the lake represents our life in the Spirit, that every time they are getting into the boat on the lake, they are reconnecting with God and, the most importantly, with their life in the Spirit. Jesus and the disciples do not stay in the boat. They go back to shore and miracles happen. People are taught, loved ones are healed. When we lose the connection of getting back into the lake, we can't be prepared to do the ministry that we are called to do. It starts first by resting and being engulfed in the life and the Spirit. It is prayer, reading the Bible, singing hymns of praise, listening to the Spirit, to the voice of God. And in our lives, once we have rested in the Spirit, being strong enough to face again the next mission and ministry and what it looks like. Sometimes we are afraid and resistant of the future. Sometimes we are uncomfortable because we like it in our comfortable place. But when the disciples were afraid, Jesus was there. He calmed their fears, even stopping storms when it needed to be stopped. And sometimes God will direct our boat in a direction that we had not intended for it to go. But if we feed our life in the Spirit, there are amazing, miraculous healing events ahead of us. Because where we see 5 loaves and 2 fish, God sees a banquet set for a multitude of friends we have yet to know or share table with. Our task is to each day be bathed in the life of the Spirit so that God can use us in the ministry that we are called to at that time. Let's challenge ourselves that every time we step into the water this summer, to be reminded of the amazing calling that God has given to us and say a prayer for someone who is in need of being lifted up to God's arms, even if that is you. One last story of a friend of mine whose life looks very much like our story today. This is a friend who answered the call to ministry in their youthful days, like so many in the ministry. Always serving the church's call to faithfully and courageously, always willing to look at the life of the Spirit of themselves and others in order to see where God was leading them. There were some bumps in the road, but the adventure was always new and exciting, and that it was done with grace and humility. This person was not a flashy minister, not a climber, trying to serve bigger and better congregations, but always willing to listen to where it was that God was calling them in the ministry and go with a servant's heart. Many new things happened in the ministry as they listened to the people, the communities, and situations which were in front of them. Serving in ministry is exhausting, but this friend has done it with conviction and prayer and patience. But my friend did not go it alone. My friend listened to God and went and chose a partner wisely, and in the end, they worked tirelessly, resting when they were called to rest and going to new places when they were called to go to new places, always listening to that call of God and to their heart. It was a one day at a time kind of ministry, and they have now served church bodies together for 40 years, which is a biblical number. There was a congregation that was in need of a new shepherd, and they came and served that congregation and served them well. God stepped in when they didn't know what to do and did the impossible. My friends, you know and have had the amazing opportunity to be on the journey in full-time ministry with my friends. They will be here among you next week. Reverend Phil and Michelle Jackson celebrated their 40th year in ministry 2 weeks ago. Next week, when you welcome them here, they were with you several years ago, but as you welcome them here, they will have heard the call of God and have served you as part of that faithful ministry. They rested in the life of the Spirit, and communities have come to know transformation through Jesus, through them, as they've served, working the equation of 5 plus 2, and they will be remembered. I know that this congregation holds a special place in their hearts, and they are very much looking forward to coming to be among you. This congregation has also worked that amazing formula of 5 plus 2 equals remembered. There was a seminary student struggling to get through school, not always knowing how the bills would be paid. And many congregations helped out in big and small ways in order for that time in history to be accomplished. Over the years, I have visited this congregation many times. I have been here when Phil and Michelle were among you and had the opportunity to study along Ann Buttman and Louise Scott when CFTS did the Boston Seminar, and they took me, as well as Peter, to so many grave sites. Not Peter, your minister, Peter, who used to be a expert in gravestones, to complete my research. I was here for our dear friend Peter's installation to this church and another dear friend Ann Buttman's memorial service. But the single act for me that worked the equation 5 + 2 = remembered from this congregation was when you gave me support, and that check came in and during my time of seminary from the scholarship that you have. Thank you for committing to me when I was an unknown seminarian to you and to helping me with my education. I am honored and humbled to be back here 20 years later to say thank you. And there is one for whom this equation worked originally, who brings us back to this table, where hurts are healed, sins are forgiven, and all things are made right with God. A table where instead of loaves and fish, there was loaf and wine. And we come to this table of remembrance for all time. We come to remember a man who pointed the way to his Father, and through his death and resurrection, united us back into right relationship with his Father. Every time we come to this table, we let go of past wrongs and come to this time and place to be filled, refreshed, and sent out yet again. And in that transformation, there is healing, there is power, and there is grace. Jesus left us a legacy by taking 5 loaves and 2 fish and letting God's opportunity become a transformative remembrance of when God is at work, nothing remains the same or turns out the way we think it will. Well, can we learn from the opportunities that God places in our path for growth? Why did Jesus choose to feed these people? Can a lake be a place of transformation? And how can the ordinary become extraordinary? God places people in our journey of faith because ministry can happen at any time and any place, and those ones who come into our own paths are opportunities for God's work to be accomplished. Jesus was the one at the right time, in the right place, to be open to what God needed him to do and to be at that particular time. He basked in the life of the Spirit, and with the common and ordinary 5 loaves and 2 fish, it became a miracle and gave us a legacy for all eternity. What is it in our own journey of faith that will cause us to get out of our boats and become the instruments for future legacy to occur? We have had the one come among us, showing us the way, letting us be the ones whose lives are open to working the equation, 5 + 2, looking for the next miracle to happen.